Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, we're in the midst of OTAs here, the conclusion, I guess you might say, of the spring offseason program for the Green Bay Packers. And we need to touch on another player, a guy we've talked about a lot already, and that's Kenny Clark, first-round draft pick from a year ago. We've talked about how young he still is. We've talked about how this is his first time going through OTAs because of UCLA's school schedule from the year before. He was not able to be a part of this particular segment of the off-season program. But at the end of the day, all of those parameters, what else you want to put around it, this is a young man the Packers are very, very excited about.
Yeah, Mike, the Packers have kind of cushioned, particularly Mike McCarthy, cushioned the labeling of an offseason MVP or, you know, getting the expectations too high for young players. But you can tell how excited they are about Kenny Clark and where he's at right now based on where he finished the 2016 season and based on where he's heading in 2017. And I actually asked McCarthy a little bit about that in terms of, as you mentioned, the first time he's getting through this offseason program. McCarthy said, I mean, this is big for every second-year player, but with Kenny Clark, you know, he said his exact words were he's been killing it in the weight room and doing really everything you look for out of those young players this time of the season. I had a chance to ask Clark a little bit about that. And his biggest mindset was he felt he ended the season on a high note. He said there were some, you know, the good times and the bad in terms of working through those first, you know, months and year in the system. But where he ended the season, he made it a big point of emphasis in his offseason training. He wanted to get stronger. We hear so many times guys talk about, well, I lost X amount of pounds or I put on X amount of pounds. This is that time of the year. But with Clark, it really wasn't about numbers. It was just about the physical maturity required for that position. At 21 years old right now, going up against a lot of 29, 30-year-old offensive linemen, that's a really big thing for those young defensive tackles.
Yeah, you could see as the Packers got into that stretch run last year, you could see Kenny Clark's strength at the point of attack. When you turned on any of the game film, the All-22 that we're privileged to be able to watch every once in a while, his just brute strength inside there was really starting to show up, that development towards the end of his rookie season. And you and I get asked this a lot in our Insider Inbox column about, you know, different positions of where, you know, where can guys make immediate impact in the NFL right out of college, or where does it take longer? The more I've looked at this, I've come to believe that one of the areas that actually can take a lot of time to develop for a young player is that pass rush from the interior, because you're going up against these bigger veteran guys. I mean, there are so many centers and guards in this league who have been around for a while. They've seen all the tricks. Some new kid coming in from college is not going to, you know, make them shake in their boots by any stretch of the imagination. Mike Daniels, one of the best interior rushers, I think you could say, in the league right now. It took him a few years to get to this point. He wasn't quite, you know, where he is now, that first and second year. It was a process. And I think that's the other thing that makes it exciting about watching Clark here.
Yeah, and it's fun, too. And you go back to 2012 and you look at that season, Mike Daniels, one of the reasons he missed two games, he was actually a healthy scratch. It's just the way that the defensive line was. You got to remember they still had Ryan Pickett back then, Johnny Jolly. This was a situation where he wasn't always the top guy. He wasn't always starting. He started as a situational type player,
right,
and later evolved into a three-down defensive lineman. And you're right. And I think that's one thing when you look at offensive lines and defensive lines, it takes more time for those guys to develop because it is the physical maturity that needs to catch up. You can have all the athleticism and all the gifts in the world, but it's how does that match up with where you are at, you know, physically, mentally in some cases, and being able to really adapt and grow into those roles. I think that's something that Kenny Clark really got sort of a baptism by fire on last year. And he mentioned, I think it was right around the Philadelphia game last year, that he didn't actually even, I think he might have played like four or five snaps in that contest. But he really got back to it, and he started working back at it, started letting things settle down for him a little bit. The workload ramped up, and by the end of the season, I mean, he was a 35 snap per game guy in the playoffs and very critical for the Packers defensive line.
Yeah, that interior rush, pass rush on the inside of the defensive line is one of those underrated aspects of defensive play and what helps to make a good defense. It's so hard to develop that. A lot of times those guys on the inside have to deal with a double team potentially. That center is there to hop over to the right or left side if either one of the guards, you know, needs an extra chip block or something like that. Those running backs that stay back to block, if nobody blitzes and they don't have a blitzer to pick up, if that guy stays in there, he's going to be helping on the interior to make sure that the quarterback has a place to step up into when those rushers are coming off the edge. The interior guys can't just, you know, abandon their passing lane, abandon their rush lane, so to speak, and give the quarterback a way to escape. It's a really difficult skill, but then the guys who do it and bring that to a defense, it can change the way a defense looks on the field.
Oh, it really does. It makes everybody else's job easier. It makes those edge rushers' job easier. And one thing I always challenge people when they look at a defensive tackle, nose tackle in a 3-4 scheme, when they look at their sack output, I always challenge them to multiply it times 3. So if you're looking at it, you know, Mike Daniels, 4 sacks, look at that more as 12 sacks, because that just doesn't happen. You don't go into every game thinking, okay, this guy's going to have 2 sacks. It may happen. You know, Dean Lowry really hit the ground running at different points last season, but it's something that you can't count on. And when you get it, it's oh so valuable, because it really is just extra credit for that defense.
Yeah, the impact that those guys make on the interior in terms of not giving the quarterback a place to escape, to step up into, to make a throw when they're feeling the heat from the edge, all of that works together. And the Packers are hoping Clark and Daniels, as kind of the A number one team, along with some other rotational guys, can do that for them. But with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkiewicz over there. And Wes, we were talking about some of those veteran interior offensive linemen who take on the youngsters like Kenny Clark. And one guy that Clark will be going up against quite a bit in training camp here coming up this summer, Jari Evans, the 11 years with the New Orleans Saints. He's in his 12th year now in the NFL. We got our first chance to see him in person in the OTAs here. And as first impressions go, he's a big man.
Big man, really big man. And I think that's one of the things when you go back, you have to remember, this wasn't a guy that came out of Alabama or anything like this in 2006. He was out of a Division II school, I think, in Pennsylvania. So,
right.
I mean, this is a young man at that time that really, I think, opened a lot of eyes. And you give a lot of credit to the Saints for how they developed him. Ended up becoming one of the game's elite interior linemen, 6-time Pro Bowler, all in 6 consecutive seasons. And when you look at professionalism, talking with James Campen, Mike McCarthy, Corey Linsley talked about it too. Evans walked in the door, and there really is, I don't want to say it's like Julius Peppers, because I think Peppers is really unique and one of a kind in terms of what he's done in this league, but you could tell there was that immediate respect for his game and understanding what he's accomplished during those 11 NFL seasons.
Yeah, you mentioned the 6 Pro Bowl selections consecutively. He was part of a Super Bowl championship team in New Orleans there with quarterback Drew Brees, a future Hall of Famer. Evans is now going to be blocking for another future Hall of Fame quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. The thing that struck me that I was really intrigued by in talking to him with some other reporters the first time we got a chance to visit, he took that veteran privilege approach to free agency in that, hey, I've been around this league for a while. I've done a lot. I'm not going to just sign with anybody to continue my career. I want to go to a team that has a chance to win. I'm going to wait for that team that has a chance to win to have a need and give me a call. And that's what happened with the Packers. So he got on board right away with TJ Lang departing in free agency. Obviously, the Packers have a wide open starting spot on the offensive line at right guard where he plays. But then walking in to Green Bay, he sort of shed all of that veteran privilege stuff. He walked in and told James Campen, hey, I want to be coached. He wants to fit in with these guys. He doesn't want to step on anybody's toes from a leadership perspective. Brian Bulaga, David Bakhtiari, guys who are really developing into the leaders of that offensive line room now, he's not going to just put himself at the head of the class as the new guy, even though he has more experience than the rest of them. I really find his whole approach to the offseason, to coming in here, assimilating himself in Green Bay, looks to me like a guy who's going to fit in pretty well.
Yeah, human nature, not just with the NFL, human nature is to always just want to stay inside your comfort zone and know what you know. If you're at a business for 25, 30 years and you go somewhere else, I think it's very difficult to change that mindset and understand, you know, there's a new set of rules, there's a new set of, you know, themes. And I was really impressed by how open Evans is with that, because that's not easy to do. As it is for people to say, oh, yeah, no, I'll listen to whatever you say. For it to actually go into action is really something else. And James Campen, when he was talking with the media last week, I thought said something really interesting, too, and that's he blocked for Drew Brees. He's blocking now for Aaron Rodgers. But it doesn't matter if it's Aaron Rodgers or Joe Callahan back there. His mindset, his mentality is always the same. You're not getting to the quarterback. And that's big, because you can really psych yourself out if you think too much about that, that you have a two-time MVP behind you. You have a guy who's won the Super Bowl. That's really important, I think. And for him to come in now with as young of an offensive line as this is, I mean, Corey Linsley has a lot of experience. David Bakhtiari has a lot of experience. Lane Taylor has a year under his belt. But these are still young guys.
Yeah.
And for him to add that now to this room, I think is really an interesting mix.
Yeah, you mentioned the professionalism and talking about, you know, Camp and saying it doesn't matter who's back there. Jari Evans is not a guy who just flips on a switch and turns into the six-time Pro Bowler when the franchise is the guy who's back there. His job is his job, and that's the way he looks at it, whether it's Brett Hundley or Joe Callahan or Taysom Hill or whoever might be back there in a training camp snap or in a preseason game or however things might unfold with the reps. And coaches really appreciate that. And younger players notice that in veterans too. Jari Evans isn't just going to, you know, take plays off because it's not Aaron Rodgers back there. That's not how he goes about it. That kind of stuff goes a long way.
Yeah, at the same time, I think it's really important too for a guy like Aaron Rodgers to understand, okay, this is a guy who's coming in here and he has ample experience as blocking for one of the game's elite quarterbacks. And that's something too. I mean, that's an invaluable kind of asset to have, because there's only so many elite guys in this league. I think you can count them on probably two hands, if not one. And for Evans to have that experience, he was with Drew Brees all 11 seasons. Now, he did have one quick stop with Seattle, but I thought, as you pointed out from the NFL Combine, it was really interesting from John Snyder, their GM, mentioning that, yeah, their decision to release him at the end of camp wasn't necessarily just based on play. There were other factors that were kind of involved in that.
Yeah, it sounded like, from what Snyder said, that the Seahawks were maybe looking at bringing him back after week one and working him into the roster that way. There's a lot of permutations with guaranteed contracts and money in terms of veteran players. Well, the Seahawks cut him, and then he wasn't available at the end of week one because he went back to New Orleans, ended up starting all 16 games. He's played all 16 games in 9 of his 11 seasons. He missed, I believe it was 4 games in 2015 and 2 games one other season. The guy's missed a half dozen games in a decade-plus career. Really remarkable, his durability and longevity in this league.
The Packers value that, not only on their offensive line, but the entire roster.
Yeah. All right, with that, Wes, we'll throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford joined by Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, the Packers have another player, not a big surprise by any stretch, but another player in the NFL Network's top 100 for 2017, and it's wide receiver Jordy Nelson. He comes in at number 48, not the highest he's ever been ranked, not the lowest he's ever been ranked, but a significant accomplishment, I guess you could say, nonetheless, given that he was coming off of the ACL injury where he missed all of 2015, comes out in 2016 and you know, puts up numbers very similar to what he put up 2 years prior before he ever got hurt.
Yeah, if you ask Packer fans, I think the general consensus on social media is that he probably should have been higher than he was. 97 catches for 1,257 yards in a league-leading 14 touchdowns. What's really interesting, I think I saw this stat afterwards from the NFL, that he actually, I think he's leading the league, or at least he's in the top two or three in touchdown passes since 2011, and he missed all of 2015.
Yeah, he missed an entire season in there, yeah.
Yeah, so pretty remarkable what he did. But even more than that, one of the things I want to touch on was last week, getting a little bit of chance to hear him speak a little bit about where they are in the offseason program. You know how Jordy Nelson is. He's not going to sit here and make any grand proclamations for 2017.
Right.
He always keeps it very even-keeled. But it is interesting listening to Luke Getsy, his position coach, talk about this and the understanding that typically, guys coming off ACL injuries, especially at skill positions, have their best season the year after. In Nelson's case, he just jumped right back in the flow of things without an offseason program, without most of a training camp, and found his way. So I think the expectations, even though, you know, he's in his 10th NFL season now, that there really isn't any end in sight for where Jordy Nelson is at and where he could potentially take this thing.
Yeah, I thought in looking at his 2016 season, there was an evolution to his comeback from the ACL. The production was always there, but I think the production later in the year versus early in the year, the difference was the big plays. It was the big chunks of yardage. That's not to say he didn't make any big plays in the first half of the season, but there were definitely more of them in the second half of the season. He was starting to look more like that explosive Jordy Nelson of the pre-injury. And you mentioned it. Now it's the second year coming off of the injury. That's when players really start to feel back to normal, where whatever potential mental hang-up there was with their injury is long gone.
Yeah, and for a long time, Mike, we've talked about him being sort of a hybrid-type player because he is 6'3", he is about 220 pounds, but really his skill set is going to translate, I think, really well to playing in the NFL for a long time because you can use him outside. He's certainly been incredibly productive there. We've seen all the toe-tapping catches over the years in the, you know, a lot of spectacular plays he's made downfield, but he's also really effective in the middle of the field, almost like a pseudo-tight end. And the Packers were really flexible with him last year. I thought they played really well to his skill set, particularly down the second half of last season. And they needed that, too. You know, you had Randall Cobb dealing with some injuries here and there. You had Ty Montgomery moving to the backfield. They needed Nelson to step up, and he certainly did that. And I think gave everybody a lot more than what they expected coming off and, you know, an entire season, which he'd missed.
Yeah, and you always wonder, you know, the 2016 season, the way it ended for Nelson, the way he was making so many big plays down the stretch. Excuse me. You really wonder what kind of postseason he might have put together had it not been for the shot to the ribs in the Giants game, where then he missed, you know, the bulk of that game, then all of the Dallas game, and then, you know, gutted it out with some extra protective equipment there in the NFC Championship against Atlanta. Now, obviously, Randall Cobb had a 3-touchdown game in his absence. We saw other receivers make some big plays in Dallas. But you just wonder what type of postseason numbers Jordy Nelson might have put up with what he was doing in the second half of last season.
Still remarkable what he did in Atlanta last year. You say extra protection. There wasn't much. I mean, it basically was just a quarterback flak jacket, I think, that they threw underneath him. He didn't have the bulletproof vest or whatever had been kind of thrown out there in the weeks leading up to it. Incredible what he did at the end of the year. And now trying to, you know, find a way to get himself back to the Super Bowl and add another ring to that finger.
Yeah, well, an exciting veteran to watch just where he is now at this stage of his career. But with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. Wes, one more quick note on Jordy Nelson before we forget. His annual charity softball game, Saturday, Fox City Stadium in Appleton. I understand there's still some of the grass seating available for fans if they want to pick up some tickets for that. A great event. The players have a lot of fun. Home run derby, you know, just a really good, entertaining day supporting a lot of good causes.
Is Mike Spofford playing in that game this year?
I'm not playing in
okay,
it, no.
Right.
I didn't get that invitation.
All right. So. I heard you bat a mean cleanup, but we'll have to wait to see.
Maybe
that.
About 20 years ago I did. But but final segment here, Wes. A couple of NFL rules changes that came from the most recent owners' meetings we haven't had a chance to discuss yet. The most notable one from the fans' perspective, overtime. Shortened from 15 to 10 minutes. Just what sort of impact that's going to have is hard to say. It's being done for player safety to try not to have too many of these overtime games extend too long. You think it's going to lead to more ties in the NFL, or is that percentage of overtime ties going to stay about the same?
No, I think it is going to go up, and I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
I'm perfectly fine with ties. I think people have become a lot more accepting of it when you look at the impact soccer's had. This isn't 2002 anymore with the All-Star game where there has to be a winner. I think things change. And I like the dynamic it adds to it, too. You saw what happened with the Packers in 2013. That ended up being a very critical tie that they got against the Minnesota Vikings
to get into the playoffs.
So yeah, there is ramifications to it. And the biggest thing is you want to be able to limit the amount of exposure these guys are getting. I think one of the things, I don't know the exact statistics on it, but the amount of times that teams are playing overtime games and then end up having to play that Thursday night game, a little too high. You got to find a way to give those guys, get them off the field, get them rested, and try to get them back on the field as healthy as possible for Thursday.
Yeah, I think strategically one thing that could be interesting about this 10-minute overtime is if you have a team that takes the opening possession of overtime and they're really milking the clock, you know, going to third down every time, moving the chains little by little. You know, they could be using up 7.5, 8 minutes. That other team, as long as they can stop them and make them kick a field goal, not give up a touchdown, they're going to get the ball back. So are defensive teams going to be using their timeouts when perhaps a field goal is in the offing to make sure that there's more time on the clock so they can try to come back and extend the game, those kinds of things. So I think strategically that could be an interesting aspect to this.
I just try to stay open to these things because I was one of the biggest people that was probably saying the 25-yard line kickoff, touchback. I wasn't in favor of that originally because I thought it changed the game too much, but after seeing it in action, it made a lot of sense, and it was based on that one-year preliminary test. I think we'll learn a lot about these overtime rules over the next year.
Yeah, and a couple of other things with regards to roster rules. No longer will there be a cut down during training camp from the 90-man roster to the 75 before going to the 53. Now all the roster cuts will just go from 90 to 53 at the end of camp. And the other thing, now there will be a second player that teams could bring back from injured reserve back to the active roster when the last few years they've only been able to do that with one player. Quickly, your thoughts on those.
I like the 90-man thing. I remember talking to a lot of agents that felt that was a death sentence for their clients when they get cut on that first one.
Yeah.
Now an opportunity for them to at least get to that last game.
Yeah, all right. Well, with that, we got to wrap this up. So be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.